This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my incredible and amazing and oh so curious friends. Welcome. My name is Chad Lee, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, artists, and other experts as they solve problems in their jobs using curiosity, cooperation, creativity, and critical thinking. Right now, please welcome to the show my partner in exploration, the Admiral of Adventure, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson. Jennifer, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jed?
I'm marvelous today. I'm really, really excited. I love these best of episodes.
Well, this one is great for hands-on activities. We're doing the best of STEAM activities for kids. So grab all your materials, kids. These are going to be some fun challenges.
Now, a kid's going to need a kettle, so like to boil water and get the steam going. Is that what we're talking about?
Not exactly. Okay. Science, technology, engineering, art, and math.
Oh, right.
They're going to have fun with these.
Excellent. Yeah. I remember one of my friends came on at one of these episodes, right?
Yes, one of your good friends. Why don't you tell us about her?
Awesome. She is the first lady of magic in Australia, Sue Ann Webster. And do you remember what she taught us?
How to cut a person in half safely.
Safely. Yeah, I don't know how to do that part, so I can't do it on stage anymore.
Right, and we also had my dear friend Vanessa Brantley Newton, who is an acclaimed author illustrator, and she helped kids learn how to bring their illustrated characters to life.
Da, da, da. And yeah. I love this episode. I don't normally like dentists, but I really like the dentist we had on our show.
Yes, that was Dr. Emily Swanson, and she taught us all how to build teeth out of soap.
And more importantly, she told us why someone would want to build teeth out of soap. Because yes. To be honest with you, I'm thinking, you got a tooth in there made out of soap, it's not going to taste really good. And it's eventually going to melt and become useless. Then you got to go and get another one.
Yes, exactly. But we hope all of you love these little clips that we have put together. And of course, please go to the website, solveitforkids.com, and check out the challenge and do the activities, because I promise you, these are going to be tons of fun.
Absolutely. All right, here we go. Best of STEAM.
How do you cut a person in half safely?
Out.
Well, Jennifer, I know how to solve the first part of that problem perfectly. I just don't know how to put the person back together again. But I know someone who can. I can't wait for you to meet my friend. You know, some people claim to be the best magician in their city or town. Some people claim to be the best magician in their state or in their country. But my friend was named the First Lady of Magic for a continent, an entire continent. And I'm not talking about Antarctica where all you have to do is perform penguins. No, my friend is the First Lady of Magic for Australia. Please welcome to the show, Sue Ann Webster. Sue Ann, how are you?
I'm really well, Jed. Thank you for the amazing introduction.
I'm just saying, now where do we go from here, Jed? You take us to the top of the mountain and now the show's over.
The reason I'm so excited is because Sue Ann is an awesome magician. She's also an awesome friend. And kids are always asking me, how do you cut a person in half? And I don't know. I don't know how to do it. But Sue Ann knows how to do it. She has her own unique version of it, too. So, Sue Ann, how do you cut a person in half and then put them back together and then keep it a secret?
Whoa.
No pressure.
That's, well, I suppose it all comes down to smoke and mirrors. Well, there's a lot of performance. I suppose it's a science in performance, really.
Sure.
because there's a lot of audience psychology, there's a lot of misdirection, and there's a lot of and misdirection can come in the forms of sound misdirection, color misdirection, timing, and all sorts of things. Larger movements cover smaller movements, and with any kind of illusion, magic trick, any kind of sort of performance, magicians are constantly using all of the methods that we can to manipulate, I suppose, a person's mind in what they see. So what I'm doing in reality is different to what someone's perceiving it. And so we have to be very careful with not exposing secrets, because once you expose the secret, there's no magic anymore. So right. The magic happens when there's lots of secrets. And I must say, it's astonishing to know how easy it is to be deceived. And magic will reveal that like nothing else.
So could you, I mean, without giving anything away, can you give us an example of, like, what you would do? Like a clap, you know, like a sound that might distract people.
Exactly. Well, if we need to move something from some place to another and it might make a sound, yes, we can use sound, like clapping, like get the audience to clap and they can't hear what's happening. So anything like that, and you don't even know it's happening as an audience member, because it all flows on with sight and sound and timing, and it's like a roller coaster. If somebody gets on that little carriage on a roller coaster and off you go, and before you know it, you've just had an amazing experience, but you know, and it's done. The trick about it is to then move on to something else to stop people from thinking, hang on a minute, how did she do that, or how did the magicians do that? And then suddenly you're on another roller coaster somewhere else. You're taking them on an adventure, on a story, and before their minds stop to think, you're taking them somewhere else. And then when they look back over the whole thing, the whole performance, if you've done your job properly as a magician, the people will just remember all the positive things, because that's what humans generally remember in their mind, the positive aspects of something. If you keep that highlighted in their minds, then they will remember exactly what you want them to remember, and that's not the secret. It's just the magic of it. Mm.
And that's why I love performing magic so much. There are some people get up on stage and they say, look at me, look how cool I am because I can do this. But I love to get up on stage and tell a story, or bring somebody up on stage and let the magic happen in their hands, or because of something they do.
Yeah, just to give them a good time and feel good about themselves, it would be even ultimate reason to perform really anything, because why would you do it for any other reason?
Sue Ann, before we go any further, I was wondering, is it okay for us, we're not going to reveal any methods, but is it okay for us right now to let the people listening know that when you're performing the cutting the person in half illusion, you're not really cutting the person in half?
Okay, look, I'll actually tell you a few things. No, we don't. It's all an illusion, of course. Back in the old days when all of this started, back in, I think it was, the Saurian half is commonly believed to be invented by P.T. Selbert and first performed in the January of 1921 on stage.
Wow.
And so it's almost 100 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your anniversary. And when that first happened, you know, the time then was not like today, where we have the internet and television and movies, and we're so used to seeing all sorts of things. But back then, to saw someone in half, it was like, whoa, we have to go and see this, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And for all intents and purposes, you know, it looked real. And of course, the person came back to life. But what you were saying, Jennifer, is very true, is getting the audience involved, and with the sawing in half, with all of the tricks I do, there's a lot of audience interaction to get them involved, to get them to touch the magic, to feel it, you know. And with the sawing in half, that it was a big illusion, it was a very heavy illusion, but it was a very thin illusion, as in, you know, when you looked at it, there weren't big, thick boxes. There were very thin boxes. So when the man got in it, there was no room to move. Now, this is very important, like you were saying about bringing people up to experience things, is that we would get an audience member to come up, because if you have an audience member up, the rest of the audience will feel like they're up there with them.
Yes.
And what we did, we got them to look under this sawing in half. We got them to walk around it, to bang the table, you know, to see that there's, you know, it's solid. To look at, yeah, to look at the pieces of the boxes that went on top, to actually feel it, rattle the chains. All of this is on a video. I have a video with it that people can see at the.
Oh, now I have to watch it. Yeah, we'll put it on the website for everybody. This look, yeah, I have to see this. This sounds so cool.
At the parents' discretion.
We hope you enjoyed our chat with Sue Ann Webster. To see the videos that she mentioned and to learn how you can cut a person made out of paper and half save you, be sure to go to our website, solveitforkids.com. Right now, Vanessa Brantley Newton answers a question.
How do you bring an illustration to life?
Jennifer, this is a tough one. How do you bring an illustration to life? I have, no clue.
I don't have much clue either. However, our guest is amazing at it. I am excited to welcome to the show award-winning author and illustrator, Vanessa Brantley Newton.
Hey! Hello, everyone!
Oh, we are so excited to have you, Vanessa. Plus, I also get to see you. So
hi. Oh, yes. So excited to see all of you. This is a great day to be here. So excited.
We are going to have a fabulous show because, Jed, the problem that Vanessa is going to help us solve is how do you bring your illustrated characters to life? Now, we have to say that this is not a Frankenstein show, right? Even though this is a STEM show, we're not talking about Frankenstein, bringing them to life. Unfortunately, I know all your kids out there are going, oh, man. no. I mean, I'm kind of doing that. That'll be a future show. But this is one of our STEAM episodes, right, where we add art to STEM and make everything cool. So Vanessa's going to show us and talk to us about how she brings her characters to life. And if you've ever seen her illustrations, they just make you smile when you look at them.
So, I am an illustrator, and I just don't illustrate children's books. I illustrate all kinds of things. But how I got into illustration was I was drawing since I was 3 years old. And I really love to draw. And so the first time I drew my portrait on the side of the kitchen stove, and I did with my crayons, and my mom and dad were cooking, and it melted down into a puddle on the floor. And I jumped back and I said, I'm an artist. And they were like, no, you're not. You're a janitor. You're going to clean all of this up. And so my first job was a janitor. But then, you know, I still love to draw. And so I would draw on anything that was white. And so the baseboards in our house were white. And
oh,
so I would
no.
sneak in the closet, and I would draw on the baseboards. And then I would get in trouble, and my mom would give me comic cleanser and a sponge, and I had to clean it all up. But they finally got the memo that I love to draw. So they got me some notebooks.
Oh,
and that's
where
I began to put my artwork. I began to put it in notebooks. But I love to study people. That was my thing. I love to study people. And so when Miss Vanessa grew up, I worked in a hospital, and I took care of children who were very sick, and I took care of adults, and my art career just kind of went to the side. Now, I went to school for art, but I was basically self-taught, so I taught myself how to draw. Okay. And so I got to be around a lot of people and a lot of children, and I got to study them, look at them, so I can see when they were happy, when they were sad, when they were angry, when they were scared, and all of that got recorded up here in my brain.
Yeah.
And so I would go back to my desk and I would just draw. I would just draw a happy face. I would just draw a child that was crying. I would do all of this until years passed and I get married and I have my own little family and I want to go back into art now. So I'm back into art, but I want to do children's books. Because I love children's books.
Yes.
You know, like amazing. Things like Wimpy Kids, Snowy Day, stuff. Yes. I love those kinds of books.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And so I started studying those books. And as I studied them, I noticed that the characters' faces took on some of the same character faces that I drew when I was at the hospital working.
Oh.
I was like, oh, wow. So this is going to help me a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in doing children's books, which I do a whole lot of them, you know, getting the characters right really, really is very, very important. This is one of the characters that I drew for a book that I just did called Just Like Me. And I studied this little girl's face. And most of the children that see this picture, who are children of color, they look at it and go, that looks just like me. You know, and so they identify with the hair, the skin color, the clothing, things like that. But I began to study faces. And as I began to study faces, I had to find somewhere else to put them at. And so I began to fill up notebooks. And as I began to fill up notebooks, I began to just really think hard and long and hard about what I want to do. I want to do children's books. I want to do happy faces. I want to do stories that children would love to read over and over and over and over and over and over again. This is a picture of a little girl that I did, and I did her out of cardboard.
Oh, wow.
She's cut out of cardboard and pieced together like a puzzle. And so in coloring her face here, I did a light brown, almost like a caramel chocolate brown for her face. And then her hair is black. And I did it in layers. So I put down one piece of cardboard on top of another piece of cardboard on top of another piece of cardboard. So when you look at it, it actually has dimension to it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then bobbles and different things that we put in her hair. Then because the book is the first one of the first poems in the book is called I Am a Canvas. And so if you look really closely at the picture, you can see canvas in the background.
You can, yeah.
And I wanted to put paint on her face. So I put little dabs of paint all over her face so you can see that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I created this character. And there's a look of wonderment on her face, like, oh, I wonder what's going on. And if you notice that her eyes are to the left, or the right of the page, rather, where she's looking like how the book is going to be turned over.
Mm.
So I figured out things like that as well.
We can't wait to see the illustrations that you bring to life. Right now, we are welcoming in Dr. Emily Swanson, who will answer the question...
How do you build teeth out of soap?
Okay, all right. First off, how do you build teeth out of soap? I want to know why you'd want to build teeth out of soap. I mean, I can't... the last thing I want in my mouth is a tooth made out of soap. That sounds gross.
Well, this, of course, is not for your mouth, but it's how dentists learn, which is a really cool idea. So on our show today, we have Dr. Emily Swanson, a dentist, who's going to talk to us all about it. And what? Yes, to let you know... She is my daughter-in-law, which is really cool.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, well, welcome to Solve It for Kids, Dr. Emily.
Hi, everybody. I'm so glad to be here. So Emily is, as I said, a dentist. And we all know that everybody has to go to the dentist to take care of their teeth and make sure everything's healthy. But she is going to help us solve the problem. How do you build teeth out of soap, and maybe why you would do that? So let's start with Emily. Tell us a little bit about your job. What do you do as a dentist?
So every day I help people take care of their teeth, and that means different things for different people. For a lot of people, that means you see me for 5 minutes when I check and say everything looks good, and then you get to go home. But for a lot of people, that's not the case. And so if you have a small problem, then a lot of times we're talking about doing a filling to fix a cavity. Sometimes we have to take teeth out. Sometimes we have to replace teeth, and there are a lot of different ways to do that. So I do a lot of different things every day helping people achieve health in their mouth.
I just have to say, put this on record, I have never, ever gone to the dentist's office and then 5 minutes later the dentist say, okay, you're good to go. Get out of here.
Well, maybe you don't take as good of care of your teeth as you should.
I don't know. Maybe. I just don't. I've had more fillings than I have teeth. So I don't know that how that works, but it's true.
Well, but I think the other thing that dentists do is, of course, they teach us how to take care of our teeth. So do you have any tips for kids or adults, for that matter, Jed? Listen.
Yes.
How to take good care of your teeth?
There are two main things that you need to do, and that's brushing your teeth and flossing. Now, when you're a little kid, when you're 5 and 6, you may not be flossing because you have gaps in between all of your teeth, and that's the way it should be. But as you get older and you get all of your adult teeth, all of your baby teeth have fallen out, your teeth are going to be touching, and you need to clean in between those. You can't do that anymore with just your toothbrush. That's why flossing is really important. It keeps your gums healthy, and it gets in between those teeth where your toothbrush can't. You should be doing that once a day. Brushing your teeth, you should be doing twice a day for 2 minutes. So if you should get a timer out and time yourself and see if you're actually taking that whole 2 minutes to clean your teeth. And you want to get every surface of your tooth. You want to get the back teeth, the front teeth, behind them, on the side, all the way down to the gum line on the top and the bottom. You want to make sure you're cleaning your whole teeth.
I have a question. It's not about brushing my teeth. I'm trying really hard, but I don't understand why we have baby teeth and then big teeth. I mean, I don't have baby, well, I have a baby finger, I have a pinky, but I didn't lose it and grow another finger. That seems to be like the only part of your body that falls out and then grows again.
Well, when you're a baby, you need teeth to start chewing things, but your big adult teeth wouldn't fit in your mouth at that point. So we have smaller baby teeth that grow in, and then once we as people have gotten big enough, then they start falling out, and the bigger adult teeth come in after them.
So now we talked about what dentists do. Now I really want to hear about how and why you would build teeth out of soap, and what a dentist would do with that, more importantly.
So when I am helping people fix their teeth, if you have a problem with your tooth, we're going to be doing a lot of different things where we need to create something that looks natural to replace part or all of your original tooth. So what we want is for when you smile, for it to be beautiful and look like it's always been that way. And also we want when your teeth come together, when you bite down, for it to be comfortable and feel normal. So for those two main reasons, we have to learn as dentists the anatomy, which means the shape of your teeth in detail. So teeth are not just round. If you look in your mouth, you'll see lots of hills and valleys, and you'll see all kinds of grooves and things in your teeth. Those are normal, and they need to be there for your teeth to fit together correctly. So what we do is, in order to learn the anatomy of those teeth, to learn the shape of those teeth, we build them out of soap or wax or other things when we're practicing.